Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. You know how in Illinois, when Mike Madigan went away, when John Cullerton went away, I said, it can always get worse, and in Illinois it will get worse because you're going to replace machine politicians from a bygone era with dyed-in-the-wool Marxists, and that's what we've did, and that subsequently has meant it has gotten worse policy-wise. Of course it has. And so I was thinking about that when I was watching KJP Corinne Jean-Pierre give her first press conference yesterday.
Wasn't it painful to watch?
And it can actually get worse because now you have somebody who's just as dumb as Psaki, and you layer in the identitarian piece.
I mean, I don't know how the heck she... Well, I shouldn't say I don't know how she got that job, but clearly, when you guys hear this, you'll realize she's not qualified for the job.
KJP will see triple threats, three tools, and her fourth tool.
Hey-o.
And raise you one.
I am obviously acutely aware that my presence at this podium represents a few firsts. I am black, gay, immigrant woman, the first of all three of those to hold this position. I would not be here today if it were not for generations of barrier-breaking people before me. I stand on their shoulders. If it were not for generations of barrier-breaking people before me, I would not be here.
But enough about Marlon Fitzwater.
Oh, hey-o. But enough about me. What do you think of me, people? I mean, you don't bring that up. I mean, we know why she got the job, but you don't talk about it.
It's historic, and that's
and look at
what
me.
The Democrats, socialist identitarians are all in the business of.
Oh,
historic intersectional quotients, not so much focused on the talent level, the behavior, the work product, but certainly on the identitarian. So you see she's got the black gay female, but she's got the immigrant kicker, which puts her above triple threat on the identitarian hierarchy. I just wanted to make that point.
Where is she from? I got to Google it.
And then we went on to get to some questions. Peter Ducey was there, so there was a substantive question asked. And it was about the big guy's tweet over the weekend on bringing down inflation. Here's how that went.
The president's Twitter account posted the other day, "You want to bring down inflation, let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share." Mm-hmm. How does raising taxes on corporations reduce inflation?
So are you talking about a specific tweet?
He tweeted, "You want to bring down inflation, let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share."
Look, you know, we have talked about this past year about making sure that the wealthiest among us are paying their fair share, and that is important to do, and that is something that the president has been working on every day when we talk about inflation and lowering costs. And so it's very important that as we're seeing costs rise, as we're talking about how to build an America that's safe, that's equal for everyone and doesn't leave anyone behind, that is an important part of that as well.
Wow.
What?
Can I have a translation, Dan? You're
so follow up again. Let me restate. How does one address the other? That's the question.
Well,
but how does raising taxes on corporations lower the cost of gas, the cost of a used car, the cost of food for everyday Americans?
So look, I think we encourage those who have done very well right, especially those who care about climate change, to support a fair tax code climate that change. doesn't charge manufacturers, workers, cops, builders a higher percentage of their earnings, that the most fortunate people in our nation, and not let that stand in the way of reducing energy costs and fighting this existential problem, if you think about that as an example.
What people can't see is that she's reading from talking point. Like, she flips her folder to, you know, whatever the question is, you know, corporate income taxes. I mean, it was reading off of that and trying to act like she was feeling that or thinking that.
You heard her almost skip there when she said safe. I mean, equity. She, all they have is these rote, canned phrases that they use to sound empathetic, to sound engaged, to sound like they're doing something about it. They're aligned with your concerns. I mean, that was just, you know, words that came out in no particular order that had no particular relevance to the question. So she doesn't know what she's talking about. Jeff Bezos. He's the founder of Amazon, if you haven't heard. He owns the Amazon Post. He responded to the Biden tweet. The newly created disinformation board should review this tweet, and maybe they need to form a new non sequitur board instead. Raising corporate taxes is fine to discuss. Taming inflation is critical to discuss. Mushing them together is just misdirection, or dare he say, disinformation. 312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA turnkey.pro text line. This is stunning. Lack of competence, baseline knowledge is something to behold. These are our betters. These are the smart people.
Have you ever seen this type of incompetence before?
I see it all the time.
With the press secretary.
Yes, we see it all the time.
Who is worse than her? I'm trying to think.
Dee Dee Myers comes to mind immediately. Okay. She also knew nothing. Horrible. There are many communications people that know absolutely nothing. You see it in politics all the time. And by the way, there are a lot of politicians for whom they are flacking who know absolutely nothing. You see it all the time. You're seeing it right now. Joe Biden, the big guy. But James Freeman points out in the Wall Street Journal, maybe there is actually something here. Maybe that is purposeful on behalf of whoever's tweeting on behalf of Biden. And their play to reduce inflation is to bring basically stunt economic growth. He writes, does Freeman, it's possible the president is not confusedly combining two economic concepts. The chilling possibility here is that Mr. Biden understands exactly what he's saying and that he intends to use confiscatory taxation to depress economic activity in a misguided belief that he can reduce demand and end inflation by crushing business, which is what you saw happen in the 70s, the combination of Nixon's price controls and Carter's stagflationary policies. And the Biden administration seems intent on combining the two, as we saw with Nancy Pelosi's offer to move legislation that would allow the president to set energy prices, for goodness sakes. So maybe they're crazy like Fox. I doubt it. But it is worth pointing that out, that this could be a repeat of the worst of the 1970s between Nixon and Carter. But in terms of KJP, quadruple threat? Wow. Breathtaking ignorance. I mean, no idea what she is talking about.
You think that she'd rehearse, though, to deliver, you know, this BS that she's trying to sell, or that the administration is trying to sell.
Ralph and Rantoul.
Hey, top of the morning to you guys. Yeah, they know they're lying. They don't care. Yeah. They know that the average voter the average Democrat voter is so stupid and non-discerning and doesn't understand economic principles and won't be able to stitch that together. There's a particular person out there, we'll just call him Joe. I think of him every time I hear somebody like KJP talk, and I thought he will swallow everything they give him like a pellet thrown into a koi pond. And he just eats it, and he doesn't understand anything, and he will continue to vote Democrat. Just the way it is. They know they're lying. They don't care. They think that we're stupid, and almost all Democrat voters who aren't stupid know they're lying and don't care either.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. Well, Larry Summers, former Clinton economic advisor, he chimed in on this. It's perfectly reasonable to believe, as I do, and POTUS asserts, that we should raise taxes to reduce demand to contain inflation and that increases should be as progressive as possible. Okay, well, fine. So Larry Summers knows something of what he's talking about, unlike KJP. And you want to have that debate straight away? Let's have that debate. That's exactly the debate we should have. And so what Larry Summers is advocating by crushing economic growth to reduce demand by cutting off the supply of goods and services. Okay, so you want a recession. You're saying we're going to instigate a recession. That's what Larry Summers is saying. Maybe that's what Joe Biden is saying. He probably doesn't know, but whoever's tweeting on his behalf is saying, I don't know. Maybe they're just playing cheap egalitarian politics, and this is just a the posturing tax the rich always is popular with the base. But Larry Summers isn't playing to any base. He thinks this is sensible policy, but understand the implications of what Larry Summers is suggesting is the right policy. So raise your hand if you want the federal government to push us into recession, to push an anti-growth, a negative growth environment. That's a little bit difficult, more a difficult position to hold fast to as the primary, as the midterms approach, isn't it? Thus the need for dishonesty and the blathering on of boneheads like KJP, climate change, tax the rich, equity, fair society, blah, 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 danger Will Robinson, like a, talking points automaton that she is. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. As we move from quadruple threat, that's KJP, the new White House press secretary, to triple threat, I just want to say something, too. This requires some analysis, some thinking, because this is not easy to keep track of who is at the top of the pyramid when it comes to identitarian politics. So you think that Karine Jean-Pierre, with the immigrant kicker, displaces triple threat, who only has the black gay female. But lest we forget,
she's got the biggest in town.
That's right.
So don't forget about that tool in her toolbox, because I like to talk about tools.
I think female with the biggest dong in Chicago is greater than immigrant, and so I'm going to say that triple threat with the dong kicker beats quadruple threat with the immigrant kicker,
okay,
and that triple threat retains her identitarian title. That's my analysis on it. If you want to challenge that, you're welcome to 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. But I'm pretty good at intersectional scoring. I think most intersectionalists and identitarian ideologues would agree with me on that.
Well, they look to you for guidance. Yes.
Well, I'm a bit of an expert on the topic, expert fan, vocationalist. Yes. So anyway, two triple threat.
Yeah.
She had a big press conference yesterday to announce what she already announced, but to do it in physical, with her physical presence, which is prodigious given her dong. And this is about the curfew at Millennium Park starting at 6 p.m. and going from Thursday to Sunday, right, for the foreseeable future, because we're going to quell crime. But The problem is, if you can't enforce something, does it matter if you announce it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text
line. Well, she lacked a lot of details at the press conference, but later had a one-on-one with Marianne Ahern from Channel 5, and she told her that private security firm is going to be out there at Millennium Park. And you're like, okay, well, who's, she didn't ask who's paying for that, and will they be armed?
What do you mean, who's paying for it?
Well, we're probably paying, I'm sure we're paying for it, right? Yeah. But a reporter asked her, you know, what if kids are at Millennium Park past 6 o'clock at night, Thursday through Sunday, are you going to arrest them?
Why do you want to go to arresting children?
No, I don't. I'm just wondering.
But I just have to raise that issue up. No, we don't want to arrest children.
Sure.
If we have to because they're breaking the law, we will. But what we've seen in other areas of the city when issues have arisen is our officers talk to the young people, educate them about what the rules are, and in most instances, the young people disperse without any incident. Yeah. That's what we're hoping will happen.
Yeah, sure. They didn't do that on Saturday night. They didn't disperse. We didn't have like a little one, a little powwow between police and the thugs that were running rampant through the town and throwing stuff at cars for no reason, just for, you know, fun.
It's hard to have a one-on-one with a mob.
Yeah, you know what it is? But this is my favorite line in the press conference, and I thought of you, Dan, because this, you know, they make these declarative statements, they being the Democrats, and everything's fine, okay? This is 4 seconds of fun, okay?
We're creating safe spaces in our city, and our downtown is safe.
Okay. All right, bye. That's a wrap. See you guys later.
Okay, well, where are the safe spaces?
Yeah, oh, so the safe spaces, you have to go to My Chicago, My Future. And that's a place where you can go with your parents or just on your own kiddies to find activities throughout the city through the summer months that you can partake in.
Is one of the safe spaces like within the police perimeter around Triple Threat's home? Is that one? Where are the others?
That would be a good safe space. I don't know. I have to log on. I might start a volleyball, midnight volleyball camp for boys to provide a safe space. It's things like that.
It's
just a bunch of nothing. I'm so sick of this bull jive for the past 3 years watching this or being. Yeah. There's no plan.
That's an odd statement that we're going to create pockets of safety within the city. Just a point of order: isn't the charge to make the city writ large safe?
Right, because I mean, a lot of Chicagoans fear that, you know, they're not going to be allowed in Millennium Park, and that's going to drive them to other parts of the city. Like, next time they might hit Wrigley Field. They might hit Navy Pier. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah, pockets of safety. Our goal is to have pockets of safety. We're going to create pockets of safety in Chicago. So then outside of those pockets of safety are those zones of unsafety?
They're also putting up signage in Millennium Park telling kids, like she thinks that they're actually going to read these signs. Saying that if you can't be alone after 6 p.m. Thursday.
What's that sign say?
What is it?
No bare feet. Not that sign. The other sign. No fighting. What's it mean? No fighting. Yeah.
She's also rolling back the curfew from 11 o'clock to 10 p.m., which reminded me of when we were kids and the curfew was 10 p.m. And this happened every night before the news started.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
That is not nearly as fun a recall as my Caddyshack reference.
Michael
on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi. Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. Thank you for taking my call. This is a bad situation, and Mayor Lightfoot created it. For the past 3 years, she's been telling us that these young people are victims, and it's the cops who are the perpetrators. Now what?
Right.
How is she going to enforce a rule about, you know, unaccompanied minors not being at Millennium Park after 6?
Private security, well, apparently.
Private security.
How is private security going to do that? So you're going to have private security that has no power to arrest, talking to kids, many of whom have demonstrated they have no respect for authority. And what's going to happen there?
It's the same group that's on the CTA that is ineffective, and they've actually run away from crime scenes.
They're not armed. Are they going to be armed?
No, it's the same group.
Right. So then how does that go exactly? How does that play out? And if they continue to be disruptive, then you call police, and then you make arrests, or then the police have another engagement and you try again as whatever lawlessness is happening happens. I think, thanks for the comeback. I think actually putting Lou Loomis in charge of this would be good. Is Brian Doyle Murray available to reprise his Lou Loomis role from Caddyshack? Maybe he can get the kids to straighten up and fly right like he did at Bushwood.
Well, she said, you know, our young people need to know basic community norms. They have to learn to respect themselves and each other.
Uh-huh.
Like, felt like I was at a kindergarten class.
I appreciate the public service
announcement.
She also offered this.
It's not just because it's downtown. Our children need to be accompanied by adults,
Dan.
Period.
Calling on parents to do their part.
Yeah.
You could, Dan, why don't you be that adult that hangs out with kids?
Right.
That won't look creepy.
Any adult will do.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So just again here. So we have the Young Turks being free tonight, pardon my Rod Stewart. And now all of a sudden families matter?
Oh.
Oh, so now mom and dad matter again. Mom and dad don't matter when it comes to K-12 schooling. Mom and dad don't matter when it comes to welfare state policies that have decimated so many families over the last 60 years. Government can replace mom and dad. But now we need minors in Millennium Park accompanied by mom or dad or any old adult will do. Uh-huh. It's funny how difficult it is to close Pandora's box when you open it, isn't it?
I'm on this My Shy, My Future website. Oh, boy. I mean, challenges. These theme challenges will push you to dance. Spit bars, showcase your art or tech. There's just different things you could do on online pre-record videos. I mean, I don't see how this is nothing. This is a big nothing burger. And they sent out an email to every CPS parent yesterday, you know, that we have to do our part and we have to help. And if your kid needs something to do, go to My Shy, My Future.
Mm-hmm. Jeff in Lincolnshire.
You know, I found that press conference interesting because, like typical Democrats, they hide from the facts. It depends on what your definition of is. I reject your numbers. I don't accept the adjective alarming. It's depressing when you're presenting things to her that are obviously happening, and she just seems to ignore the reality, like that character in Animal House that was screaming everything was fine during the chaotic parade scene.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Well, look, inflation is transitory. There's no crisis at the border, and there's no violence problem in Chicago.
There are safe spaces in Chicago. Safe. That is what she said, Dan. And she means it this time.
And thus the need for private security and curfews, because there's no problem here. Nothing we can't handle with some signage.
Signage. Oh, my God.
Well, how many people and what percentage of those young people milling about around the Bean over the weekend read at grade level? The ACLU, by the way, not too pleased with triple threat.
We particularly have significant concern that the policy, the curfew, will be enforced disproportionately against minority young people.
Mm-hmm. That's what I told Peyton and Eli. I'm like, we're going on a little experiment Thursday night. I'm going to put y'all out in Millennium Park at 6:01 and see what happens. You go to the right, you go to the left. I'm serious. And I told him, bring your cameras, and I want to know what's going to happen.
It's racist. That's what the ACLU is saying. Oh, really? Well, it's fun to see the left cannibalizing the left. It always is. So now Triple Threat can deal with what we dealt with. I mentioned it yesterday. I'll mention it again. Mm-hmm. When a CTA bus driver was brutalized just outside the perimeter of Millennium Park back in December, and there were young people running amok, jumping on cars, creating havoc, and not promoting safe spaces. Back in December, we said at the time, in addition to predicting what would happen come the summer of joy, that you better do something about this because people, including young people, do not have the right to access the city when and how they want. And now we're here, a place we told you we would be 6 months ago. And it was racist then. The deep thinkers in the Chicago press corps, like Greg Hines, a card-carrying member of the big government press corps in Chicago, called me racist. We had him on the show to kick it back and forth. To his credit, he came on. Most of these leftists won't, so I'll give him that. And now here we are, exactly where we told you we'd be. But this is what Chicago says they want. And so I got to tell you, and Chicago land, by the way. So I got to tell you, as we say all the time, you know, the hand-wringing from those who are in charge or who have routinely supported the same, the men and women of always who are in charge, not particularly persuasive. Not, I really have a difficult time mustering the empathy for people who have been part of tearing this city apart, turning it into a sewer. I really have a hard time saying, oh, well, now you get it. Because you really haven't demonstrated you do. You just don't like the consequences of who you are and continue to be. And your inability to connect the dots is exasperating. It really is. That's what I would say, not so much to our listeners, because our listeners are dot connectors, but to those in your social circles, you know who I'm talking about. I could probably give you their addresses, or at least the communities and neighborhoods in which they reside, disproportionately, to borrow from the ACLU.
Dan, we got a text message. This is a perfect assignment for the drag queens after their library hour, supervising minors in Millennium Park. It's from the Amish texter.
Chris on the Dan Ryan.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Yeah, so it's funny because I watched a portion of that lovely press conference, almost vomited in my mouth, but the point I'm trying to make is that she's saying that you have to be 18 years old to be an adult down there, right? So how many level-headed 18-year-olds do you know that are with 16 and 17-year-olds? So, I mean, it's amazing that they allow this to happen and say, oh, well, if you're 18, you're an adult, you can go down there and you can be in Millennium Park. But honestly, when you were 18, Dan, I'm sure that you were a bubblehead just like I was. So I'm sure the riots are going to just keep on going.
Thanks for the call, Chris. I was a refined country gentleman by the time I was 18. Frank in St. Charles.
Yeah, good morning. You know, if you two would watch The View every day, you would know that the problems that we have in this country are because of Republicans and white supremacists. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
And Fox News, yes.
Yeah.
But people, all these people that say, Fox News, and they're to blame for the shooting in Buffalo. 18-year-old boys, and I know because I have them in my house, they do not watch TV. And especially if they did watch TV, it would not be Fox News. No teenagers watch TV anymore. They watch YouTube clips and things on TikTok. So sick of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't see a lot of what I suspect are Tucker Carlson viewers at The Bean over the weekend.
No, I didn't.
But that's just supposition on my part. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Let's go to the old mailbag.
Oh, okay.
We've got a letter that begins, Dear Casey. No. Dear Karen Feeding, this is some advice column at Slate.com, which is a left-wing rag. Incredible.
That left-wing rag. No.
It is a left-wing rag.
I know.
I didn't say it like that.
I know, I
did. Matter of fact, because it's matter of fact.
It is, yeah.
Parents going to Slate Karen Feeding column are lost to begin with, but this one particularly so. Dear Karen Feeding, Yesterday, my 17-year-old daughter, a junior in high school, told us she was going to her boyfriend's house.
And?
Turns out she lied. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun,
I only
dun,
found dun. Out because today I casually mentioned Roe v. Wade may be overturned, and she replied, I can't wait. So many innocent lives will be spared. We got into an argument in which she ended up confessing her actual whereabouts. She went to a pro-life rally with her boyfriend.
With her boyfriend? That is so sweet.
Aww. We've grounded her and taken away her phone for going behind our backs, but she's showing no remorse. I just can't believe it. This girl who dressed up as Ruth Bader Ginsburg for Halloween when she was 10. Well, did she dress up or did you dress her up, Mom?
Yeah.
Mom. She's heading to law school in a couple of years. I seriously thought she was pro-choice and a feminist. I've been taking her to rallies and protests since she was a baby. We've been educating her about safe sex and consent. We donate to Planned Parenthood every year for Christmas. That's so wonderful. I'm fine with her disagreeing with us on the other topics, but I had an abortion years ago. We live in a conservative state. I don't want her right to choose to be taken away. And I'm furious at her going behind our backs. I'm suspicious of her boyfriend. I know he's a conservative-leaning Christian. And I don't want to have raised a daughter who votes for whomever her boyfriend does. How do I convince her being pro-life isn't helping her in the long run? Signed, just trying to be a feminist. All right. We need some help. What advice and counsel do you have for just trying to be a feminist?
312.
Just trying to raise a feminist.
Yeah, 312-642-5600. You know the number. Turnkey.pro answer line. Or text us at 64636. Type in DA and then a quick comment. Well, what was the advice columnist's response? Has that been released yet?
Dear Just Trying. I suppose I should say that sometimes we raise children who have different politics from our own, and this proves to be more than a phase. If this proves to be more than a phase, you'll simply have to respect that. Alas, I don't feel that way. Some politics are to be challenged at every turn, and there are even those that should result in one being cut off in adulthood, of course. Luckily, she still is in your house and still subject to both your influence and rules. Inundate her with pro-choice content. Require her to read articles and books that explain why it's important for women to have control of their bodies. Remind her that a person can choose for themselves to never have an abortion, or at least intend not to have one, while respecting the rights of others to choose otherwise. Hopefully, you've already had conversations with your daughter about how your family's politics differ from those of many of your neighbors. It's time those discussions got more frequent and pointed. Talk about the importance of maintaining one's own values in a relationship. Remind her, as she may have heard otherwise recently, that it isn't the job of a woman to follow what her man does without regard to her personal thoughts and needs. This may be a long and difficult battle. Hopefully her interest in overturning abortion rights will be short-lived, and she'll move on to another romance. However, young love can be a hell of a drug, and she would hardly be the first girl to acquiesce to some nonsense because of a boy she liked. You need to stay on top of what sort of information she is taking home from this kid and figure out how deep his influence goes. Don't allow her to go with him to any conservative events or any other environment where she's likely to face some attempts at indoctrination. What an ironic statement that is, especially without telling you. You may want to limit the amount of time she spends around her family, around his family, I should say. Constantly challenge their politics without attacking them as people. Help her to connect the dots between what she hopefully feels deep inside and how this boyfriend's values differ. Resist any urge to just suck it up and allow your daughter to do her own thing politically. You're fighting for her character, her humanity, and her ability to extend empathy to others. You can't let this boy win. Good luck to you. That's the advice.
What advice would you give that lady?
You're the mom. You're the female.
Well, I was trying to think how I would feel if my sons went to a pro-choice rally or pro-abortion rally. I wouldn't, I wouldn't want them to lie about it and tell me that, I'd rather talk to them about it before and not go behind my back. I know that. I think this mom should be grateful that her daughter's not knocked up and pregnant and that she's with a wonderful Christian man who believes in his convictions, and that it means it's that important to him that he brought her to a pro-life rally. I think that's wonderful. That's, at least her daughter's not going to have to go through what she went through and get an abortion, at least not with this guy, because it sounds like he's got his head on his shoulders and he's not, you know, they're not having sex.
Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Morning, Dan. Amy, thanks for taking my call. Now, I got some advice for this mom if she wants to take and make sure she can raise this leftist and everything like that. Keep lying to her about reality. Take and encourage her in all kinds of disgusting immorality and everything like that. Teach her and show her and encourage her to take and live like hell and to do all kinds of evil and everything. She'll get her way. Yeah, what a crazy, crazy world we live in with this mom. Huh.
Thanks, Craig. I don't think that's good faith advice from Craig for mom. Monica and Lyle.
Hi. I can relate to this mother. I have the exact opposite problem. Mm-hmm. I have the child who's woke, and I'm the conservative. So basically what we do is we challenge our child. We say we love you. We respect you. But no, there are certain things that don't fly. And if things change, then things change. But I'm not going to abandon my daughter, throw her out of the house, because she feels differently from me.
To be fair, the advice columnist says there are some things that should result in being cut off in adulthood, of course. So you cut her off when she turns 18. Yeah.
No.
Bad advice.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
So what do you talk about with your daughter?
Oh, I am.
Go Monica.
It's
hard, isn't it, sometimes to have conversations with your kids?
Because the hardest thing to do is say no. It's, as my husband says, the easiest thing to do is say yes all the time. And you have to say no as a parent. Nice, you know, that's exactly what life is about. Sometimes you have to say no.
Okay.
And it's not always pretty.
Thanks for the call, Monica. Yeah.
Phone lines are lighting up.
Ron, Salem, Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning, guys. I believe this mother needs to win this argument with her daughter for her, to cover her own guilt for the abortion she had. You know, the saying, you throw a rock in a pack of wolves, the one that screams you loudest is the one you hit.
Uh-huh. Thanks for the call, Ron.
Has she discussed her abortion with her daughter?
I'm fine with disagreeing with us on other topics, but I had an abortion years ago. You know, why did she volunteer that?
Mm-hmm. I wonder if she talked to her daughter about that. Ugh.
I'm sure she did to shame her.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Are you saying I'm a bad person? No, we're not saying women who had abortions are bad people. It's another misunderstanding of the pro-life movement. Purposeful. We donate to Planned Parenthood every year for Christmas. That's how lost this mom is. We donate to Planned Parenthood every year for Christmas. That's how guilt-ridden she is. Tony and Steger.
Yeah, you can let a kid decide if, you know, it's a boy or a girl while it's a child. But if she's pro-life, you have to ground her right away. So, you know, they can't decide that on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
It sounded like she grounded her because she went behind her back. But I think if she went behind her back and went to a pro-abortion rally, she wouldn't have grounded her.
Probably not. Yeah. Bob, Edison Park.
Guys, the point I'm getting out of this topic is that this is the problem with conservative parents. I mean, this is why liberals win. This is why they have a generation, is because at least this mother, who I absolutely find vile, at least she's engaged enough in her daughter to try to make a difference. Dan, how many conservatives do you know, and you look at their kids and you're like, oh, my gosh. Oh, dude, where did this kid come from? I mean, I got guys who are vet bros with tattoo sleeves down their arm, and their kid looks like he should be whipping rocks at cops with Antifa.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Bob. I mean, I don't know. I know a lot of conservatives whose kids are pretty squared away, and the values have clearly been communicated. I think for most, it's like Monica and Lyle, it's less about what's happening in the home and more about what's happening in larger society. And it's just difficult to control that when you have limited options for K-12 schooling, you have limited options for college, you have limited options if your kid wants to go in corporate America or the arts and entertainment. You know, this is why we say at some point you have to stop retreating because there will come a time when there is no place to retreat to. And it's been conservatives, not so much in the home, but outside of the home in larger society. Conservatives have been retreating for too long, and we've run out of safe spaces, to borrow from our illustrious mayor. You have to stand and fight at some point. Pat in Lockport.
Yeah, good morning. I think the best advice I could give that mother is to shut her damned mouth. Every mother should be thrilled to pieces to have a young lady who does not agree with first-degree murder of an innocent child, and to have a young gentleman in her life who agrees with that. She should bless that child that yep. she had enough common sense to hang around with the young man who is Christian and conservative. That's what this world needs, not some idiot blabbing her mouth about how she gives money to Planned Parenthood and slap her mouth about her own abortion and inundate her daughter with a bunch of crap, because that's exactly how she's going to lose her own daughter. Take care, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Phil, Northwest Side.
Yeah, good morning. The best way to fight this is with just truth, you know, like you guys do every day. You start giving people real numbers. I do it with my kids. I've done it with my relatives. You know, when my ex wanted to abort our daughter, thank God she didn't, and it was a massive fight. I was finding out 20 years ago they were putting abortion material in shampoos, makeups, conditioners. Now you find out Pelosi and friends, you know, are making money on body parts and everything else. And then you start giving them numbers on Planned Parenthood, like 30,000 abortions a week since 1971 or 72. When you start giving people numbers and tell them who's connected in business and who's doing these things, they start to wake up. And also, in my father's generation, people really thought it was just, you know, cells. They didn't know. Now we have technology. And you can see this. And thank God you can see this. And it's one of the reasons I donate to the places that give the ultrasound machines. That's yeah. the best way to fight it. Let them see and make these decisions. And you also have to tell them, say, hey, you know, you could leave God out of the argument completely because of the advancement in science. And you could also let them know you'll regret it for the rest of your life and the cancer it causes women and everything else.
Thanks for the call, Phil. You know, something else, too, is when somebody has to lie and obfuscate, what does that say about the the compelling nature of their position? What does it say about the integrity they're bringing to this discussion? And so there's a good piece in the Journal editorial board, actually, about this, some of the associated hysteria after the Dobbs draft opinion was leaked.
Yeah.
And one aspect of it, which continues and will continue, is this idea that it's a slippery slope and Griswold and Obergefell and so forth will fall next. Well, just on the point of Griswold, and this is, of course, is contraception between married couples, you know, married couples using contraception, and that's the Griswold case. Yale law professor Akhil Reed Amar, who supports abortion, has chimed in on this. Lib law professors, you're just trying to scare people with boogeymen or something about, oh my God, Griswold is at risk, he said in his podcast. Every single Republican Party platform for the last 40 years has said, we hate Roe, he countered. There's never been anything like that about Griswold. He called out a colleague of his at the University of Texas for engaging in this demagoguery. He makes the point, Griswold, first of all, was a 9-0 case. He also uses the words of the relevant chief justices on the matter. Justice Roberts, quoting him, I agree with Griswold Court's conclusion that marital privacy extends to contraception. Alito, the Griswold case likewise concerns an issue that is not realistically likely to come before the courts. As for Eisenstadt v. Baird, which extended contraception rights to unmarried couples. I do agree with the result in Eisenstadt. That's Alito. Gorsuch, I can't imagine a state trying to pass a law in this area, and as I've said, I cannot imagine the United States Supreme Court taking such a law seriously. Justice Kavanaugh, I agree with Alito and Roberts. Amy Coney Barrett, I think Griswold is very, 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 very unlikely to go anywhere. In order for Griswold to be overruled, you or a state legislature would have to pass a law prohibiting the use of birth control, which seems shockingly unlikely. The Yale law professor, Professor Amar's conclusion, seriously, this is not even like argument in good faith that they're actually trying to put Griswold in play. America is not going to move forward if we keep utterly mischaracterizing what the other folks are saying and why. Right. If you cannot honestly state your opponent's position and thus your own position, then debate is not possible. Even in the rare places where it's allowed these days, which is a whole nother topic. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, podcaster and author Matt Walsh has a film coming out on June 1st. He's trying to solve a riddle that bedevils us in modern American society.
Yeah, what is that?
The the baffling question. It stumped a Supreme Court justice just recently.
Yes, it did, and it is.
What is a woman?
Yay.
What is a woman?
What is a woman?
Here's that's the name of his film, by the way, brought to you by the same people who produced No Safe Spaces with Prager and Adam Carolla. Here's the trailer for Matt Walsh's forthcoming film.
What is a woman? Can you tell me that? Well, you're at the Women's March. You must have some idea.
Please, if one person could tell me what a woman is.
You are not here for women. We ask you to leave.
What is that?
I'm a husband. I'm a father of four. I host a talk show. I give speeches. I write books. I like to make sense of things.
A woman is not anything in particular.
There is not one particular thing.
It could be many things to many people.
Some women have penises, right? Some men have vaginas.
I like scented candles, and I've watched Sex and the City.
Yeah.
How do I know if I'm a woman?
That's a great question.
You're not a scientist. You're not a gender studies major.
No.
How do you know that you're a man?
I guess because I got a dick.
Well, that explains
it. Can a man become a woman?
I'm not a woman, so I can't really answer that.
Women only know what women are.
Are you a cat?
No.
Can you tell me what a cat is? Do you want to tell us what a woman is?
I'm a biological woman that medically transitioned to appear like a male. I will never be a man.
And so they go on the internet and they're told that all of their problems will be solved if they become a man.
So you worry that there could be a sort of social contagion element of this?
A teeny tiny bit, maybe.
It got me at 42. Your child doesn't have a chance.
And you're affirming it with hormones that have never been used in this way.
Puberty blockers, which are completely reversible.
Completely reversible.
One of the drugs used is Lupron, right? Which has actually been used to chemically castrate sex offenders.
You know what? I'm not sure that we should continue with this interview.
You don't want to talk about the drugs that you give to kids or...
How can they be removing the healthy breasts of 15-year-old girls?
There are masculine girls. There are feminine boys. What are we going to do about that? Carve them up?
How can this whole thing be happening, Matt?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What is a woman?
Oh, I want to see that movie now.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. Yeah. And some of those interviews, I can't wait to see the full interview or the snippets that are used for the film. The 42, they got me at 42, that one. The ghoulish doctor who provides drugs, the puberty blocking drugs and other drugs for minors to quote unquote transition. Yeah, it looks good. But here's the other thing, too, and it's woven into that trailer you heard. This goes back to this Ross Douthat column from last month that we talked about in the New York Times. So three things, three possibilities here. One is, he's talking about the rise of this gender bending, trans identifying. One, society's just become more acceptable. It's become more acceptable. Society's become more tolerant, so more people feel comfortable to be who they are. That's one possibility. In terms of, you know, what is the overriding explanation for the explosion, particularly among Gen Z, we're talking about is a staggering number. One in five identify as trans in that generation. It's
one
lunacy.
In five.
So society's become more accepting. That's one. People feel more comfortable. Number two, it's just teenage experimentation, and it's nothing to worry about. It's passing fad. Number three, what was mentioned there, which even one of the pro carve them up people said, could be a teeny tiny component, the social contagion. Teeny tiny component. What do you think it is that has people so addled that they can't even tell you what a woman is? They can't, in other words, say what they know to be true. They can't offer an honest description of a woman for fear that
they'll
offend the LGBTQIA plus orthodoxy.
Well, is it bad? I mean, females have two X chromosomes. Males have one X and one Y chromosome. That's how
XX and XY keeps it pretty simple. Yeah.
Right. That's how I explain it.
And so then what's the explanation for the phenomenon?
Well, can I tell you what kids are doing right now? Just because I'm a little in the know. So guys in high school are pretending that they're gay to get to the girl, and then they gain their trust, and then like, oh, I love you. And then they come out and say, well, I love you so much, you made me straight again. A lot of that is happening right now.
Yeah.
Because it's cool to be gay, and it's cool to be, you know, transitioning and all that.
I get it. It's cool to, you know, pledge allegiance to
but
the
it's manipulative.
To the rainbow flag.
Yeah. And it's almost June, so the flag's going to be popping up everywhere you think the Ukrainian flag thing's happening. Just wait till June.
An elementary school PTA invited students to be recorded pledging allegiance to the pride flag. This is in Cedar Grove Elementary in Montgomery County, Maryland's public school system. The school will be celebrating love, respect, and tolerance via a video compilation of students holding pride flags and saying the words love, respect, freedom, tolerance, equality, and pride. Be recording those video segments during recess and will be uploaded to the YouTube and so on and so forth. So be a pledge allegiance to the rainbow flag. The Pat Walker Health Center at the University of Arkansas recently announced it would change the name of the campus's women's clinic to the GYN, G-Y-N clinic.
Again.
The name change is important as the Pat Walker Health Center affirms diversity and aims to create a welcoming environment for all patients. So you had to remove women from the Women's Health Center, the GYN clinic now. He's expecting.
Oh, I can't watch that. I tried for the sake of the show. Have you tried to watch it, Dan?
A Wisconsin-based law firm is asking the Keele, Wisconsin Area School District to drop complaints against three eighth-grade students who are accused of calling a classmate by the wrong pronouns. Three eighth-grade students called a he or she rather than a they. So there was a Title IX complaint filed against the three eighth graders.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't make this stuff up again. And people can't make mistakes.
And so back to the question, where is this explosion coming from? Is it society's more tolerant, people feel more accepted? Is it a teenage experimentation? Is it social and political?
312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Susan in Harvard, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
my definition of a woman. A woman has a breast. A woman has a vagina. A woman is able to carry babies. A woman has a shape. A woman lactates. That's the definition of a woman. A woman is a woman. If you look at yourself in the mirror, you are a man. You have a penis, and you and you go ahead and you can make babies. But a woman is the only one who can carry them and have babies. And people are just going crazy with today's society. It's a mental illness.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's the way I think.
Thanks for the call, Susan. I don't think you have to apologize for that. No, I learned that a long time ago watching Arnold Schwarzenegger in Kindergarten Cop, and I learned so much from Schwarzenegger.
Boys have a penis. Girls have a vagina.
Thanks for the tip.
But I just think that a lot of, you know, there's, I know a few transgenders, and I just think that they're still not happy even after they transition, and they think that it's going to be easier as a woman. Tim Terry that works at Channel, he worked at Channel 7 for a while. I said, it's not easier as a woman if you think that it's going to be. It absolutely is not.
Tom, Crystal Lake.
Hello?
Hey, Tom, you're on.
Yeah, it's what it is. It's a severe love starvation in our society today, and it's one more manifestation of that, and it's the then never-ending search for significance that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Tom. Jeff, Cal City.
Oh, good morning, Dan and Amy. Honestly, I believe that this truly is nothing but perversion, and it's indoctrination. This whole LGBTQIA+ is nothing but sex. Every single thing that they want you to accept is sex. This isn't accepting someone because they're short, or they have a missing arm, or they talk funny, or they're fat, or they're mentally challenged. It's all about sex. Every single definition of them, it's all about sex, and it's perversion.
Thanks, Jeff. Margo Burridge.
Yeah, well, I do agree with him. The Democrats, the libs they're so crass, they have reduced us down to this. But I think it's a lot of peer pressure. When you consider how easily young people are led and how easily they are influenced by not just teachers but peers and all of that, I think they're just convincing themselves because they want to be cool. They want to be in with their friends and all of that. And
But how do you become cool? Just, you know what? To take a step back, because this is where it's all at. It's all social and political. So you're right. You're right about they want to be cool. And Amy, you said too about being gay is cool. How did that come to be?
Well, the news media and the teachers, and you know, it's all been all this subtle stuff, you know, influencing our kids since, and now we're finding out since kindergarten. So, what do you expect? I mean, they're like little, as Rush used to say, little bowls of mush waiting to be influenced, and now they've been influenced in this way, which is, of course, not in their own best interest. But the parents were beguiled. I mean, who would think that this was going on? Who would imagine that this was going on? No one. Mm-hmm. No one. It comes right out of left field when you find out your kid has been taught to hate America and that gay is preferable to straight. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, well, I just think a lot of people are acting like they're gay because it's cool when they're really not gay. But they're trying to get the girl, man.
That's the definition of a social contagion. Mm-hmm. Kathy and Joliet.
Oh, good morning. I have to echo Margo's statement involving the kindergarten teacher, because kindergarten teachers belong in labor and delivery room, and start it right, she decides who's boys and a girl, right in the labor and delivery room. Skip all that classroom exposure crap.
There you go.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, we need to get the kindergarten teachers involved earlier. Good point. David and Winnetka.
Yeah, I blame a couple things. First and foremost, technology, which seems to kind of divide, you know, put people in isolation within front of a machine. They don't really know how to interact. Now they come out of it, everybody wants to feel part of something. And when I say everybody, I'm talking about the weak mind. They need to feel a part of a greater, you know, whatever. But yeah, I definitely blame technology.
Thanks, David. Kevin Northfield.
Dan, I would like to quote your role model, one of the smartest men who ever lived, Voltaire, who said, "Those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities." Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Wait a minute. Actually, a woman is more like a beer. They smell good. They look good. You'd step over your own mother just to get one. But you can't stop at one. You want to drink another woman.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Of course, the pandemic's not over. That sad little man told me so, so that's how I know. And thus, we'll keep you updated on the case totals, even though we're not supposed to count by cases anymore. The Chicago Press Corps still does.
Yeah, because that's what they're supposed to be about, hospitalizations and deaths. But no.
Illinois has 5,447 new cases yesterday, zero deaths. Yeah. Chicago remains at medium COVID community level, so please act accordingly, Chicagoans. You're at medium level. If you're at high level, like in Evanston, then you got to put masks back on kids in the schools like Evanston did.
And also they're recommending masks indoors in Evanston. So if you go to any restaurant or store, you're supposed to mask up.
No, of course.
Not just at the high school, okay?
Right.
Because they're high level, even though the hospitalizations are lower than average, and they're averaging one, like not even a death a day.
Right. Yeah. So and then after that high comes like Kiwi. And then Rainbow, and then
you gotta do the bridge. You always forget the bridge.
And then deep
to the La
dish
end.
Pizza level, or you get a deep dish pizza if we get the. I can't remember all of it, but the bottom line is that this is very serious, and please act accordingly. Social distance, wash your hands, wear a mask, wear a space suit.
Well, I have one.
Stand on an idiot circle.
Yes.
And so forth.
If you want, you know, there's goggles for the eyes and earmuffs for your ears, because remember when my neighbor thought that his daughter could get COVID through her eyeballs?
For more on this, please be joined by Jeffrey Tucker, founder and president of the Brownstone Institute, author of Liberty or Lockdown. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. It's always good to get caught up with you.
Yeah. We want to make sure, in case you were traveling to Chicago anytime soon, you knew we were at medium level. You didn't confuse that for high or low, and so you could adjust your travel plans accordingly.
Well, you know, what I'm thinking about doing is that I'll just find a small isolated apartment somewhere and then order all my groceries in. And that's great because it means that I'll be unexposed, and then the workers and peasants can be sandbags for whatever remains of the COVID virus, and I can stay clean and pure.
Well, there's some people, sadly, that are doing that in Chicago. One woman was interviewed on NBC5. They haven't left their house. They turn down weddings. They don't go to outdoor eating because her kids, 5 and younger, don't have a vaccination. And she will not leave until they get vaccinated. And that's the lowest risk group.
Yeah. I have to blame public health messaging on this.
Thank you.
It makes me sad. I was out shopping the other day. Some nice mom, you know, with her kid. And the kid was maybe, you know, 18 months, 2 years old. And they're both all masked up. Now, you know, what is it that possesses a parent to throw a mask on a 2-year-old kid? You know, but it's not even necessary. And it just made me sad because, you could condemn her, but the messaging over these 2 years has just been absolutely chaotic and crazy and nonsensical. And nobody knows what to believe. They don't understand natural immunity. They don't understand how you get this thing. What are the effects? What are the demographics? What pathogens are? Or that they've always been around. You know? I mean, just basic things. We could have had, you know, a good tutorial in cell biology at the very beginning of this pandemic would have saved us all this trauma.
Eric Topol over at Scripps, cardiologist, I'm sure you're familiar with him, he couldn't disagree with you more. The United States is now in the midst of a new wave related to Omicron variants BA2 and BA2.12.1, for those of you scoring at home. 90,000 confirmed new cases a day, 20% increase in hospitalizations the past 2 weeks. This belies the real toll of a current wave. Since most people with symptoms are testing at home or not testing at all, there's essentially no testing for asymptomatic cases. It's likely at least 500,000 per day, which is far greater than any of the U.S. prior waves except Omicron. This is serious business that we're treating cavalierly, Jeffrey.
Right. Well, so here's the problem. I mean, there's no question that the artificial delay of the prolonging of the pandemic has definitely created, you know, ever more mutations of this pathogen and raised the threshold of herd immunity higher and higher and higher over the course of now two years and 3 months. So we prolonged the pandemic. And the period of uncertainty. We've raised the number of infections that are required to achieve herd immunity, and the vaccination, you know, as we know now, did not prevent the infection or spread. So, you know, there's a sense in which, you know, we're not done with this because we took all the wrong policy. We went all the wrong directions, from the isolation to the closures to the masking, and that created other problems besides the pathogen, namely the loss of a moral sense, the collapse of communities, a growing sense of nihilism and confusion and PTSD. I was just reading a study this morning, came out last year, I somehow missed it, that as a study of the forced closures and isolations as a result of the pandemic policy, 30% of people surveyed all around the world, many countries, 30% have developed solid symptoms of PTSD as a result of these things. So it's a mental health crisis also, and we're seeing that play itself out in tragic ways, such as the killings and at the Buffalo grocery store over the weekend.
You're suggesting that the pandemic induced a mental break, or there's suggestion.
Well, I mean, and sorry for saying such a provocative thing, but the kid wrote that when he was in isolation after the school closures, he started digging around online. And out of a sense of desperation for meaning and a loss of identity and a loss of purpose, and found extremist, Nazi ideology, and made up, you know, a story about his own personal validation and invented a fake community for himself. So it's pathological, mm-hmm. And crazy, but a direct result of 6 months of isolating for a kid that was obviously very fragile to begin with. And that's just the beginning, right? The Surgeon General has remarked on a mental health crisis among the young. What are we going to do about this?
It wasn't 6 months, especially not in New York or Illinois. It was more like 14 months of isolation.
It's 6 months at the minimum. I tried to look this up in that particular school. They definitely closed in March, and the earliest they could have come back was in September. But I don't know the particulars of the school closures in his community. And the fact that we're not even looking into this is, to me, very interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know who's asking these questions, but I'm not seeing anybody ask these questions. I was just writing about it this morning, and you can't do this. Social distancing is an evil philosophy. It just is. You can't do this to people. You can't take away people's community and friend networks and liturgy of life without dulling the moral sense. This is what happens to people.
And if that doesn't breed enough fatalism, then you also have the economic crisis it's brought on and people's ability to get by, which you wrote about.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. So the inflation, the loss of purchasing power, the sense of panic that comes with falling financials, diminished hopes. I just read a survey this morning. Economic optimism has collapsed 30% in the last 12 months and is at historic lows right now. And so you put all this together, my friends, you know, what they've done is create a crisis on the level that we've never seen in our lifetimes. And it's serious.
Well, yeah, the really baby formula underscores your point.
Yeah.
The shortage of that.
Yeah. So here's a great example. Because, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, they said, stop talking about economics. I want to hear about the profits of Wall Street. We're talking about health here. Okay. Well, you can't put up an artificial barrier between public health and economics. Those things are very linked. And the baby formula shortage reveals that so clearly. But also the shortages of so many other things. For example, you know, the inflation in diesel prices right now is making trucking very expensive, and that's diminishing the number of goods we're going to get on the shelves. And the random shortages we're experiencing in every area. Economics is connected to all of life, and it's connected to public health. In fact, a healthy economy is part of public health. But you remember this, right? I had to check my memory by Googling this yesterday. How many people said that we should stop thinking about economics and only think about public health?
Yeah.
That
well,
was
I'm right. Money for lives, and it was sort of those other what? Dismissive yeah. comments. Yes, absolutely. That's
yeah,
the case.
Yeah, that's exactly what they said. The last 2 years have been such a blur for us. We can't remember, but I searched Twitter for exactly those search terms you just said, you know, money or lives over money, that kind of thing. It was everywhere. That's what everybody says. Well, here we are with an economy that's gravely under stress, with supply chain still broken and breaking more every day. Falling purchasing power. You know, the government gave us big checks in 2021 and then took it all back by stealing their value, right?
And now we come out of this, you know, after we were all in it together for 2 years, so we were told,
yeah.
And everybody had to do their part and so forth. And this was going to build a stronger, better America because everybody was rowing their oars in the same direction to conquer this virus and get to the other side and look out for one another. And now three-quarters of Americans believe the country's on the wrong track. My only hope is that this is not just another case of men and women without chests who just want their appetites to be fed, and it's a wrong track number that indicates an understanding that what we did over the last 2 years was catastrophic.
Well, and I agree with you. And what's strange is that you have so few official sources out there even mentioning this stuff, certainly not Fauci or our new Surgeon General. They just don't want to talk about it. They're pretending as if the lockdowns, the closures, and the isolation never happened, you know, or it has no social consequence, no economic consequence whatsoever. It's almost become a kind of a strange taboo subject in American life, that it was so bad that we can't just admit it outright. I don't know how long we're going to go like this with
forever.
World of pretend.
I mean, politicians dug in their heels. They're not going to come back and say, oh, you know, I'm sorry, you've been fooled for the past 2.5 years.
They should, though.
Right.
I mean, they should. And until that happens, I just worry that we're going to continue to experience these kinds of traumas. And at some point, you need some people to take responsibility for what they've done. And I don't know. I mean, is it going to take another generation? But can we last that long? I mean, the emergency is real. It's real, and it's serious.
That doesn't even account for the 100,000-plus deaths of despair via addiction. But, I mean, it's they should, but those who won't with respect to the politicians. The real test is not politicians offering mea culpas. The real test is will electorates impose consequences on lockdown politicians? And, frankly, that starts today in Pennsylvania with that Republican Senate primary because Dr. Oz, I don't care if he was Trump-endorsed, was a proponent of these lockdowns and other nonsense. And if he's the Republican nominee for Senate in Pennsylvania, then that says that a lot of people have not learned the lesson of the last 2 years.
That's fascinating. I didn't actually know that because I've not followed that particular race, and I just generally don't follow politics maybe as closely as I should. But I like to think that all the advocates of lockdowns, that the lockdowns themselves would become the most important political issue. But what I'm seeing is an attempt to kind of bury the topic completely.
Yeah.
And yet it's easily the number one issue. I mean, it's what's behind the inflation. It's what's behind the mental health crisis. It's what's behind the drug overdose crisis and the shortened lives. You name it. Lockdowns are behind it. And we have to have some truth about this. And if we don't talk about it, it could happen again. And we know that this is what's going on. I mean, there.
Yeah, in Bill Gates's new book, he essentially says it should happen again the next time the pandemic rolls around. It just needs to be faster.
That's right. And the World Health Organization said the same thing. And the Biden administration just got out of a COVID summit nonsense with, many other nations where they endorsed a big statement saying, this is proof that we need a whole of society, whole of government response to pandemics. So they... Washington didn't apologize. They have every intention of doing it again. And this is an outrage. This shreds all Western law, all public health principles, everything we know about society, everything we've learned over half a millennium of experience. You know, and these people are just going on, acting as if this is normal. It is not normal. And it needs to be stopped, and they need to be called out. And the press corps is not doing it. It's very frustrating to me. We don't even have commissions planned in this country to examine what happened. So what it means is that to like your show and the Brownstone Institute and others of us out here to keep setting the record straight and keeping this issue alive in the public mind, because there is an attempt on the part of the mainstream press and all the political establishment, I mean the legacy Republicans too, to just bury the whole topic. But we cannot do that, because, I mean, my own perspective at this point is that, I'm sorry to put it in such maudlin terms, but civilization is at stake, you know? It's getting serious.
Jeffrey Tucker, founder and president of the Brownstone Institute, author of Liberty or Lockdown. Jeffrey, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Insert Democrat socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House law for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. Gang. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. Out. When you're moving out.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That theme music means it's time for our weekly conversation with Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints, wirepoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, we made the Wall Street Journal again, and as usual, when we level up to national or international attention, it's because of something we're doing wrong. The Wall Street Journal editorial, massacre as usual in Chicago. That's sort of depressing on multiple levels. One, that there's such violence. Two, is that we've become completely desensitized to it. Even the Wall Street Journal editorial board has become desensitized to the violence in Chicago. It's just what you think of when you think of Chicago. You and your colleagues recently looked at some of the data that may help explain why we see so much violence in the city. And part of it is the number of arrests that are made in cases where a class X felony has been committed.
Yeah, Dan. Hey Amy. The news can't get worse. And as you say, when we start getting the editorial board with massacre as usual in Chicago, that means it's getting really ugly, uglier than it has been. And I think what's even scarier about this is that, you know, we're desensitized to what happens in the South Side and the West Side, but you know. Here, what's being pointed out is that things are starting to happen in the Loop, right? Things are happening in the Bean. So it's becoming a much bigger deal. And you know, what's amazing about the response is that, you know, Lightfoot's response to this is we're going to have the kids with a tougher curfew to 10 p.m. as if that's a solution, when in fact, you know, we should be looking at, you know, how the hell do we start policing much more aggressively. And, you know, with my colleague Matt Rosenberg, we looked at the arrest rates, because that's one of the big things, right? If our policemen aren't arresting people, if the bad guys think they can just commit crimes and know they'll be out immediately or maybe not even be arrested, then they can continue on and do it more. So we looked at these at some of the major line items there for crimes, and you look at things like, you know, aggravated battery. In 2019, it was a 20% arrest rate. Now it's down to 11%. Burglary, it used to be 7% in 2019 before COVID. Now arrest rate is 5%. You know, motor vehicle theft, only 10% of the 10,000 thefts last year people were arrested. So people who do crime know that they can continue to do more of it and get away with it. And until that changes, it's a green light. And as a matter of fact, you can't help but think that we're importing thugs from other places, because they know they can do bad things and get away with it.
So Mayor Lightfoot's solution to, you know, the flash mob that happened Saturday and then happened 2 weeks before that and then also happened in December to that CTA bus driver, her solution is putting up signage that's to remind the kiddies that they have to leave if they're not with an adult by 6 p.m. Thursday through Sunday. And she's also hiring a security force that is unarmed, similar to what is being used on the CTA right now. Do you think that's going to work at all, Ted?
I don't think any of that stuff works. It's, you know, until you get serious about things, it doesn't work. Signage, who reads signage, right? I don't think it's going to, you know, have any kind of impact. Not to mention that, you know, who cares, you know, that they're going to ignore it. Then, you know, hiring private security, well, you're starting to see a bunch of neighborhoods do that. So, you know, it starts to get really weird when we're not sure who exactly is protecting the city. And
it's also strange. It's also strange that a triple threat criticized neighborhoods for hiring private security. Right. Now she's hiring private security for Millennium Park. So I don't understand why it's okay for the city to do it, but it's not okay for neighborhoods to do it if they think they need more eyes and ears on the streets because of the lack of police presence or the lack of political willpower to prosecute criminals from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. But obviously the need is there and the data bears it out. And then this other statement that was made by Triple Threat spokesman, the restriction, meaning the curfew, aims to build a culture of care in our public spaces instead of using police enforcement to criminalize our youth. Well, that gives you a real insight into the attitude toward police, which is, of course, a fundamental part of the problem, is that police don't feel like City Hall has their back. Obviously, Kim Fox's office doesn't. So they're back on their heels and trying to, you know, protect themselves. They're in a defensive posture when the mayor's office and the prosecutor's office are an aggressive anti-police posture. Bad combo.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about this. And this is so messed up in so many levels, right? So if the police can't tamp down these things, how are some, you know, private security forces going to do it, unarmed, et cetera? I mean, what power are they going to have, and who's going to listen to them? I mean, you know, we've seen that these people who want to do bad things don't listen. They don't care. And, you know, they're increasingly told that they can do bad things and that, you know, they're the victims, not the criminals. So it just doesn't make sense. And I think it also just kind of comes back to just incompetence. And it's hard to know what's incompetence and what is purposeful by a lot of our leaders. And I call them leaders between quotes, a lot of our leaders here in Illinois, because it's really incompetent to think that these kind of things are going to make a difference. And maybe, you know, maybe the news covers it. Maybe people are gullible. A lot of them are gullible, but I don't think so. I don't think when it comes to crime, they don't buy it because it's real. It's one thing to fake a bunch of policies, whether it be on some economic policy or some tax policy. But when you start to do weird or silly things when it comes to crime, everybody starts to see it. It just takes maybe a while for it to you know, get into people's heads, but it's the wrong way. And, you know, these kind of announcements are sheer incompetence.
At the state level, there was a number of bills signed by Governor Jelly Belly, more than 125. important work being done at the state level, for example, legislation that requires the school district to provide a plant-based school lunch option to students. That's effective of August of next year, so you want to plan for that for the fall of 2023 for the kids. Make sure your school has a plant-based option for your kids.
It reminds me of the Michelle Obama salad bar, which later became a coat rack storage facility because nobody took, you know, nobody wanted the salads.
Yeah, it's this is important stuff. Capping the sales tax on gas, which of course is just not allowing for the cola increase and so on and so forth. Big things. Anything we missed? I know the plant-based school lunch offering was the headliner, but anything we missed that we should be apprised of, Ted?
Well, I mean, the first thing everybody should know is that while we're arguing, this is the sad part of all the mess that's going on. While we're looking at the bad crime, while we're trying to figure out the craziness like Evanston reinstating masks at the high school, while that's all happening, they just pass all kinds of laws that continue. I mean, I don't think there's a single law. Maybe there's one or two that are favorable to Chicagoans and Illinoisans. But while all this mess goes on, while we're all looking over here to our left, they're passing all kinds of crazy bills to our right. And we've highlighted a lot of those. Many of them have increased property taxes. Many of them have, you know, increased pension benefits. And many of them are doing those kind of things where, you know, we keep moving away culturally away from what makes sense into the craziness.
We didn't get last week. I don't think we got you to weigh in on this. The exciting news, Boeing's leaving. No, not that. Casino in Chicago, over on Halstead in Chicago, real economic engine for the city, bring tourism back, bring convention business back to McCormick Place and the like. That's the promise, you know, a couple few thousand jobs and economic activity and. And the casino will do for Chicago what they've done for, you know, Joliet or Aurora or
nothing, right?
East St. Louis, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to save Chicago police and fire pensions. And, you know, if you have any thoughts about whether our policemen are being taken care of now, when you look at their pension funds, they're about 15 to 18% funded. Meaning that they're broke. There's hardly any money in the pension fund for them, and so this is the kind of stuff. And again, back to incompetence. This is the kind of stuff that Chicago and Illinois pass as an attempt to pretend to fix things. But I've looked at the casino stuff, and for me, it's always a big mess in terms of what it does when you start relying on sin taxes or things like these to fix your budget. You're in deep, deep trouble. And if the poor Chicago police firemen think that this is going to save their pensions, I've got news coming to them. It's another failed move. What else can I say?
And speaking of pensions, by the way, that's comical. The idea that the casino is going to bring the police and fire pensions back to solvency. That's the promise. That's a lie, even by their own numbers. But of course, nobody bumps up their numbers to the unfunded liabilities, pays attention to it. Nobody will until one of these pension funds fails, unfortunately. But on that matter, pensions now eat up half of the state's higher education funding. That's a fivefold increase in the last 15 years in terms of the percentage of the state's higher ed funding that is going to pension spending. So here again, University of Illinois, second highest in-state tuition in the Big Ten, and we're pouring billions into higher education. Number one, very few students from Illinois, relatively speaking, for a state land-grant university, are getting into U of I. And number two, to the extent that you're paying for higher education, you're not really paying for your students, or you're not even paying for students in particular. You're just paying for the pension benefits that have been conferred to the professors.
We've analyzed this at WirePoints quite a bit, and what's fascinating is you know how many administrators there are now in universities and how much they make and their average pensions. And so what's happened is they ballooned their system so much, and you know we can even start talking about DEI, right? As they start adding staff for that, these staffs have just ballooned and is sucking up all the money. And so rather than making school cheaper, or rather than using some of that money for scholarships, it has to go to pay for multi-million dollar pensions. You know, you're talking about people who retire young in their late 50s. They will have lifetime pension benefits of $3.5-4 million. And in the meantime, we're squeezing out our kids. Our tuition rates are super high. And so kids are going, Illinois kids are going to other states. And guess what? They're not coming back. And, you know, the New York Times, everybody's reported on this. We are an outlier right now in terms of losing our kids to other states. And one of those obvious reasons are these pensions.
And when the markets crater, as they have the first half of this year, guess what else craters? Revenue for state and local government. So not to mention the ROI for those pension funds, and thus the increasing unfunded liabilities. So now you have where you police and fire pensions in the city that are less than 25% funded in a bear market, not the bull market we've enjoyed over the last decade. And at the state and local level, after all the COVID funny money and all that's been gobbled up very quickly, now you're entering a period where you may have significant austerity when it comes and scarcity when it comes to the monies that were flowing to state and local coffers, in addition, and not just, but including to pay down or to try to keep pace with burgeoning unfunded liabilities. So that reckoning that everybody's wondering when, if it will ever come, and so on and so forth, well, get into a recession, have the money dry up for government, have the projected returns come in, or have the returns come in much less than the projections that are built into these actuarial tables, and all of a sudden that moment may be closer than people want to realize.
No, you're absolutely right, Dan. And this isn't a Chicago problem only, or an Illinois problem only. It's virtually every city in Illinois that's struggling with this. And you know, the pension funds are in horrible condition. And as you say, you know, we had a record year last year with the stock market returns, given all the funny money and the inflation that came with it. But now it's all unwinding, and nobody has a plan for this. And you know, when you look back at the last decade, we had massive benefits in the stock market, and Illinois didn't even hold even then. So what the heck's going to happen now if this is in fact a protracted, you know, bad period for multiple years? It's the doom we've worried about. Let's see. You know, of course there might be new begging for more bailouts. That might be the next step.
Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks as always.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
She
was on
sister.
MSNBC with Keith Olbermann's ex-girlfriend there, Katie Turr. And the girls were chatting about the massacre at that supermarket in Buffalo. And the topic turned to censorship, social media. And this is what Gillibrand had to say.
Can you regulate speech on the internet without violating free speech?
You don't have to regulate speech. You can regulate misinformation. You can say you can't yell fire in a theater. You can. Right. There's many ways you can abrogate speech rights that are consistent with the Constitution. And for, again, an 18-year-old to develop such hatred in his heart through media platforms that do not have any regulation is a problem. And so we need common sense, thoughtful regulation. We need a data protection agency that keeps our data private, that can create frameworks where this makes sense. It takes time. It takes responsible leaders to create this, but there has to be a willingness to be able to have common sense reform on all these issues.
Oh my gosh. It's a reminder how unimpressive a human you can be and still be in the United States Senate. You don't have to regulate speech. You regulate misinformation. Well, and that comes in what form and who decides. You can regulate yelling fire in a crowded theater. Thank you, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. I remember the Schenck decision from law school. What are you talking about? These people have no idea what they're talking about. It is much like listening to KJP, the newly minted White House spokesbeing, talking about raising corporate taxes and inflation and somehow climate change and equity get into the response. It is just leftist refrigerator magnet phrases strung together in no particular order. It's just stunning to listen to these people. How do you even respond to that? Of course, how did Katie Tours? This is an important conversation. No, actually, it's not an important conversation. It's not even a relevant one. For more on this topic and a few others, please be joined by Ken Cuccinelli, National Chairman of the Election Transparency Initiative, former Virginia Attorney General. Ken, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, good to be with you.
So how do we regulate misinformation while not regulating speech?
Well, we'll turn to the Ministry of Truth in George Orwell's world. All of these people need to immediately be asked, okay, so when Nina's not running it and we move Stephen Miller in to run it, are you going to be okay with it? Pick your Trump person, right? When Rick Grenell is running it, if they put me in it, are you going to be comfortable with it? The founders had this great idea that people weren't perfect. They seemed to notice that, and they designed a system around it. But even as nasty as Thomas Jefferson sometimes got, the 1800 presidential race still kind of puts all the others to shame. He was famous for, among other things, saying that the cure to bad speech is more speech. And these, frankly, tyrannical morons seem to think the answer is less speech.
Well, yeah.
More than Thomas Jefferson, I'm sure.
Of course, they have no foresight because all they're looking to is November. And so and then they'll look to the next election after that. So, of course, they have no foresight. And they're completely unbounded by hypocrisy, so they can change their position on a dime if their people aren't in charge, as you well know.
That's right.
But the other thing, too, is just the moron piece of it. Speech that is not speech, that is action. Is regulated. So fire in a crowded theater, making a specific threat against a particular individual. Yep. I mean, these are things we could stop people from yelling fire in a crowded theater. Yeah, I know we do that. That is codified in the law. And so it's just such a struggle.
100 years.
Yeah, it's such a struggle to have these conversations.
Hey, by the way, I'm
because
impressed
they don't even
you
know
remembered the case.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm impressed you remembered the specific case. But
yeah,
Holmes, yeah. That was... And those specific threats are legitimate. But the word threat is in there. It's offense. It's not mean. It's not even hate. You combat hate with the reasons the person is wrong. And that's the answer. That's always been the answer. And to do otherwise, you start to turn them into victims. You turn them into victims of tyranny. And you start to create sympathy for them instead of by arguing intelligently, and maybe that's their shortcoming, against the underlying position. And then using things like the Buffalo shooting, where you've got a left wing, let's be clear, mentally ill. So it really doesn't matter what wing, right?
Right.
But this is an eco-socialist who wants to blame Tucker Carlson. And that's just not very convenient for the left. So they rewrite those facts, pick the Tucker Carlson name out, and they're off. So you get an idea of what their disinformation board is going to do. It's going to peel away the inconvenient facts. And people don't need a Ministry of Truth to support the truth. They need a Ministry of Truth when they're afraid of the truth.
Yeah,
and that's what Senator Gillibrand is.
Right. I mean, you know, hate speech. Oh, I'm taking a stand against hate speech. Right. Like she's on the, like, and people like her on the side of the angels. I mean, the First Amendment isn't there to protect speech you agree with. That's the whole point. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember here in Chicago, the Nazis marching through Skokie, defended, yep, and their right to do so, defended by the ACLU. Well, those days are completely gone, as all of the leftists and the leftist organizations have completely abandoned any sort of principle or pretense of principle for, yep, anything I don't like should be regulated, if not outlawed.
It also, by the way, and this isn't really what we get on to talk about, it also calls into question, you know, letting so-called charities, 501c3s, participate on a tax-deductible basis in the political arena. Because, to your point, when the ACLU just defended free speech, well, there was a case to be made that they were nonpartisan. Now, you look at the Virginia action, you know, goings on in Charlottesville over 5 years, they actually defended one of the marches the month before the August 27 craziness happened, and including the tragic killing that one person. But there, within the ACLU, there was such an explosion over defending them that they abandoned that. And so if they're, because they didn't like the particular group, of course, nobody really likes that group. That's, to your point, that's the point of free speech, is to keep those people free. And sometimes that's going to be each of us in whatever opinion we might hold that's not in the majority. But when they abandon principle for outcome-based representation, then there's no reason for them to get the protection of the government. They should just operate under the same rules as everybody else. Citizens United, report what you do to the FEC and go do what you want. It's still a free country. You can do what you want. But the fact is they shouldn't get tax deduction benefits for that. Why does the ACLU get that anymore?
Yeah, they're
and,
a pack.
And we could apply that across the board.
Yeah.
They are a pack.
I want to talk to you about this initiative that you're a part of as well, this election transparency initiative, to back candidates who support secure elections, and particularly those in states that are that we saw were critical in the outcome of the 2020 election.
Yeah, so we led an effort at the Election Transparency Initiative among over a dozen groups: Citizens United, Tea Party Patriots, Concerned Women for America, Independent Women's Forum. A lot of groups you've heard of before, all working together.
Good.
All working together to get state-level candidates, state legislators, secretaries of state, to fill out an election questionnaire and to pledge to protect certain positions like photo ID and no same-day voter registration because you can't verify it effectively, those kinds of positions. But to run a good election takes a lot of different things. It isn't like the old tax pledge. I pledge to either not raise taxes, that's the tax pledge. It's just binary, yes or no. So we're going to post up candidates' responses because elections and how they're run and candidates' commitments to fixing them is a big deal to voters now, finally, and I'm grateful for that. It's always rough how we get here sometimes, but I appreciate voters' attention to it, and we're going to do it by state on our website, electiontransparency.org. And so they can see where the differences are on these election issues between people who are asking for their vote, especially in primaries. Unfortunately, this issue has gotten pretty partisan in the general elections, so you have a chasm between the two sides. But there are differences between and among Republicans and Democrats themselves. So we want to highlight those differences, and we're bringing over $2 million to bear in state races, select state races, in some of these states, particularly swing states, but not only. We did questionnaires in Idaho. Their primary is today for Secretary of State, for instance, one of the legislative races. But we're looking at Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona. The list goes on. And we intend to be there. And then those races where there's a difference between the commitment of candidates to help reform elections, a years-long process, we're going to invest some money to try to help the pro-election reform candidates win.
And how did the coronavirus affect our elections and the way we do business?
Yeah, that's an amazing question. For starters, the saddest way it affected them was a seeming willingness to violate our own laws. We can have whatever agreed upon election laws we want in any given state, but if you're not going to follow them, if the state itself isn't going to follow them, what's the point? You don't pass laws to say, obey the laws. You do elect people who commit to obeying the laws. So I was an attorney general in Virginia. I had to enforce laws that I didn't agree with, but I agreed to do it by running for the office because I know the process and I can go to the legislature to get it changed. So the complete breakdown, Amy, of obedience to our own laws was a terrible failure of the pandemic era. And that came in the form of courts. It came from governors, secretaries of state. It was really across the board. We saw it particularly in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan. We learned about it in Wisconsin after the election, such severe violations of the law by the people who were put there to actually enforce the law. And what more do you do? And the real answer is you elect people of character and judgment who are willing to commit to doing their duty first before pursuing the kind of outcomes that Ann and I were just talking about.
He is Ken Cuccinelli, National Chairman of the Election Transparency Initiative, former Virginia Attorney General as well. Ken, thanks as always. Good luck with the candidate initiative. That's great.
Well, thanks very much. Good to be with you all.
Thank
you. Have a great day.
Yep, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Time now for another reason why Dan Proft is single.
Corinne Voller is a marriage therapist, an online educator.
Please, God, stop it.
Minnesota.
Let me guess, her pronouns are her and she.
She focuses on couples considering divorce. And before I get to what she describes as the most common complaint she hears from women, not that she would take sides, of course, but anybody ever go to couples counseling and you came out better for it on the other side? Because I'd like to hear that story. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I mean, do you know of anyone that's going to couples therapy that has worked out?
Did you ever go to couples therapy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they give you, it was so long ago, but then they, have you role play and say, all right, now let's pretend that everything's going well and go out to dinner and try and enjoy yourself this weekend. Well, that was just a disaster. Nothing mm-hmm. worked. It was over. Mm-hmm. You can't save the unsalvageable.
Right. How long before that role-playing did your ex say, you ruined my life, you dirty whore? How long did that take?
Never said that.
Was that right after past the roles?
No, we stopped it. No.
Oh.
It just it wasn't.
Maybe I've seen too much Sam Kinison stand-up.
I think so.
Yeah. Here's Corinne Voller, the marriage therapist from Minnesota.
Responsibility and passive responsibility. Active responsibility would be you looking around the house for things that you could do and taking responsibility for the things that need to happen within the house. Passive responsibility would be being available to help, but waiting for somebody to tell you what needs to be done. I want to ask you, when it comes to household chores and childcare, which one are you doing? Are you taking passive responsibility or active responsibility for the things mm-hmm. that need to get done?
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the top things that I hear from women as a complaint, saying that their husbands are waiting for them to tell them what needs to be done. And they're really looking for a partner in life who is actively responsible for the house and for the children and not waiting for their wife to tell them what to do.
Whatever happened to the honey?
Active responsibility.
Yeah. Right, the honey do list. You just ask her, hey, what do you want done? I mean, you gotta, once you understand that, you'll be married, you'll be just fine. We do everything. That's what we do. We just instinctively know what needs to get done. And, some wives have demasculinized their husbands, definitely.
Or emasculated.
Excuse me, yeah, emasculated, yeah. That's what I meant to say.
Uh-huh.
And they're in fear of their wives. Like, what should I do? I don't know what to do. If I do that, I'll do it wrong. I'll make a mistake.
The only thing that marriage counselor listening to that
yes.
teaches me, the only thing I'm thinking about is don't lose your mind. Don't lose your mind. So I guess in a sense it teaches you the patience of Job to listen to somebody prattle on at you about passive and active responsibility. I cannot imagine being dragged to a session like that with some simpleton like that and being inflicted with her facilitation for a minute, much less an hour. I tell you, if I was ever in that circumstance, which I never would be, I would forever hold it against whoever cajoled or court ordered me there. That person would be persona non grata for the rest of my existence.
You got to go in with an open mind.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Uh-huh.
Noted marital therapist, Sean from Elmwood Park.
Looky here.
Would like to chime in on this. Don't you have a show where you can talk about this?
Listen to me. I like to ruin your show. Here's the deal.
Yes. Yeah, for years.
Best thing in the world when you're married, you go to one of these morons. Best thing in the world. My kids were little. My wife's girlfriend's got in her ear. He works too much. He argues all the time. You know, the usual. So I said, look, pick somebody I completely disagree with. So we got some hippie girl in Oak Brook. I was late every day intentionally. By the time you go, they're on the floor breathing all kinds of hippie nonsense.
Did you wear pants?
So you
yeah.
Not only did I wear pants, it was fantastic. Truly saved my marriage. I'll tell you why.
Why?
On the desk was her and a guy that looked like Pritzker's cousin, a big fat pig, and her kids and whatnot. I said, hey, honey, how long have you been married? She said, oh, I'm divorced. This is about the sixth session. I look at my wife. I said, we're taking advice from this dummy. Couldn't save her own marriage. She's going to save our marriage. Here's the deal. I'll make more money. We'll buy more things. I'll go to more events. I won't get arrested anymore. You want to stay married? But what do you want to do?
Yeah, that's a great
and once you've been,
that's
here's
a great
the other
pitch.
Thing.
You, nice clothes.
Once you've been Shaunitized.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
By
yeah,
a man.
Right. Yeah.
I had her meet you. I said, you want a guy like Dan Prof trying right. to take off your brassiere and pleasure you on a Saturday, or you want to be Shaunitized? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
And they answer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's no
22
question.
22 years.
There's nothing.
22 years, she's walking on clouds now. Look at her.
Oh, yeah. I've met her. Walking on clouds yeah. was not my takeaway. But there's no question the charm of referencing taking off a woman's brassiere and being shonetized. That is very charming.
You got your back against the
wall. Uh-huh.
You got your back against the wall. You go over the top, all in. Go ahead. Yeah. Let's get divorced. I dare you. Let's see who lives in a car. You try it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, the threats. Thanks for the call. That's very helpful. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Will
I have nothing to say.
No, you don't have anything to say to that? Did your counseling session go better or worse than Sean's?
A lot different than that. There's no breathing involved.
Yeah. Will and Skokie.
Am I on?
Yeah, hello? Go ahead, Will.
Yes, how you doing? Yeah, hello. The trick, my wife and I are we were in marriage therapy. The trick is finding a therapist who has a grounding and a worldview that reflects reality. Ours was a biblical worldview. Where there's rules and everything stays the same all the time. Otherwise, you get into leftist theologies, you get into, you know, women therapists who have a misogynistic chip on their shoulder. There's all kinds of different things. And, you know, today most of the marriage counselors are what they call licensed clinical social workers. Well, social work has now become socialist work. So, you know,
And so, Will, did you and your wife come out of this intact on the other side?
Oh, yeah, we're much better now.
Oh,
we're much better. It is basically selfishness on both sides and a lack of communication.
Did you?
It's always a lack of communication.
Oh, yeah, communication.
Those buzzwords.
Did you go through the active versus passive responsibility protocol?
No, that's. I do my stuff and she does her stuff and we figure out what it is. And there was a while there where she wasn't doing the stuff that she promised to do, like cook and do the dishes and stuff. Yeah. And so I started doing it. And then she started getting mad at me. Why are you doing this? You're doing this to look bad. And I go, no, I'm just doing it so we don't have roaches all over the sink. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it turns out I'm a better cook than she is. So I just do the cooking. And,
there you go.
And we figured it out. So
how many years have you been married?
Mm-hmm. 40, going on 42.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That's a huge accomplishment. Congratulations.
It's my second marriage. My first marriage is only 3 years.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call, Will. Appreciate it.
Yeah. See, there's hope, Dan. This is good.
What I heard there was sort of living separate lives. What I heard from Will there, do your thing, I do my thing. We run into each other from time to time.
That's Dan, a lot of people do that.
Dan on the southwest side.
You know, this reminds me of an anecdote that Bishop Sheen used to talk about in the 50s and 60s. Kevin Murphy died and he went to hell and he shows up in hell and he's walking around talking to everybody. Hey, Kevin Murphy from St. Adrian's in Marquette Park, how you doing? Just wondering how everybody's doing, and Satan looks at him like, who the heck is this guy? So he finally gets fed up and he goes up to Kevin Murphy and Satan says, hey, pal, listen, man. This is the land of the eternal damned. Why are you walking around like you own this place? Kevin Murphy says, you know what, Father? Or, I'm sorry, you know what, Satan? I was married to Colleen for 55 years. She gave me this place every day of my life. So go get me a glass of water. I own this place.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dan. Bishop Fulton Sheen wasn't much of a stand-up comic, but, good homilies. Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I found, you know, I thought about this. Like every divorced couple out there at one time was happily married, going to go on forever. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what, maybe the best route is not to get married. Then I don't have to deal with it. And it, so far it's worked out really well.
Okay, thanks for the call, Rick. You know, what a friend of mine's idea was to have another husband around. Mm-hmm. So that he could do all the things with the other husband could do all the things with his wife that he doesn't want to do.
Oh, I see.
So have somebody you can go to the bullpen and bring in for relief. That's not bad. I could see that. I wonder how that would fly with Miss Active versus Passive Responsibility.
Because you're married, you don't have to do everything together. You know, one likes to ride a bike all weekend. Then let them do that, and then you go play golf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from your first marriage, Amy, about active and passive responsibility?
That I was always active and he was always passive.
Of course.
Never marry a man without a stud finder or a power drill or drill bits. Never.
Right.
That means you're going to do all the work in every facet of that relationship.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just letting you know, Dan.
All right. I'll let people fill in their own stud finder joke. I'm not even going to bother.
Well, you got to be handy.
Yeah.
If they're not handy, don't waste your time.
Byron and Lombard, sorry, Amy was interrupting you.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Much like at our therapy sessions.
Husbands and wives need to treat each other like when they were dating. Husbands need to treat their wives as girlfriends, and wives need to treat their husbands as boyfriends. How many times does a husband have an opportunity to come home and sit down on a couch next to his wife, not say anything, just give her a kiss, just be there? Yeah. How many times do wives miss the opportunity of just greeting her husband at the door and saying, it's so good to have you home? These are things that are overlooked by people. You know, it's after you get married, it's like, well, now I'm going to collect what I'm due. But it can't work that way. So, you know, I just want to offer that.
Byron, I've fallen in love with you all over again. Thank you so much for that.
He had me at the low.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. But I mean, how can you really be on your best behavior for the entirety of your life? Because isn't that what you do, more or less? I mean, I don't, but isn't that what most people try to do when they're dating?
Yeah.
For some reason, I'm exhausted from that marriage therapist. I can't.
I know people pay to get a new. They're not all like that, by the way.
I think they are. Diana, Diane and Valpo.
Hi. Yeah, this is so funny. So, yeah. Okay. My husband went twice, both of us, maybe two sessions. And yeah, we were young. We were only like 20 when we got married. And yes, when you date, you always want to put on a good face and everything. Then life is real. So we went and talking to other sisters and, oh, you should go. This guy, so what we deemed from two visits, maybe two, he, for one, my husband almost punched him because he was sitting there, my husband, with his hands folded, and this guy comes across, because he was across the room, jumped up and leaped out. He's like, whoa. He's like, see, you got your hands folded, your arms folded in front of you. You're being tense, and you're trying to wanting to reject all this garbage, okay? Mm-hmm. This psycho garbage. I left there. He started ripping into both of us how, well, what do you do? We left there and said, you know what? I think we'll work this out ourselves. Who the heck does he think he is that he knows us? And today we've been married 42 years.
Maybe that's the best therapist going. Be so obnoxious and so unhelpful.
He was terrible.
That the couple says, you know what? We got to figure this out ourselves. That's not bad. That's a pretty good idea for a practice. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Diane. Congratulations.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, and what about like having to do that sort of thing like pre-marriage?
Oh, you have to go to, yeah.
Well, I know
you get married in certain churches.
Yeah, I know that. I mean,
I actually like that. I thought that was good. You do that. The Episcopalians do that too, Dan, not just the Catholics. Okay.
Yeah, but the Catholics mean it. Here's another story.
Okay.
This comes to us from India. An arranged marriage, Viyapu Pushpa and her fiancé Ram Naidu. The blushing bride, Viyapu, she invited her betrothed to follow her up to a hilltop. She said she had a surprise for him.
Oh, okay.
They stopped off at a gift shop. She bought something. Then she blindfolded him when they reached the summit of the hilltop.
Naughty.
Uh-huh. And then when he was blindfolded at the summit, the top of the hill, she took a knife and she slit his throat.
I guess she didn't want to be in that arranged marriage.
She did not want to be in the arranged marriage. Yeah.
Oh my.
He survived, but the marriage has been called off, and each of the couple's parents are blaming the other for this going awry. So number one, parents don't get involved. That's number one.
Yes.
And number two, I don't know which would actually be more suffering, sitting through that Minnesota marriage therapist or getting slit from ear to ear. I'm not sure which, but either way, I don't want to be part of any of that, which is why Dan Proft is single.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.